To HBCU Pulse Radio. Yeah. On Sirius XM, channel 142, HBCU. You're now locked in to HBCU Pulse. We're the number one outlet for HBCU life, talking about everything that's important to our culture. From on-campus issues to politics and what's trending on the yard. We always keep that same energy. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
What's going on, everybody? This is Randall Barnes, the founder of HBCU Pulse and the host of HBCU Pulse Radio, in the building for another special edition of the show on today. Well, listen, we got a lot to talk about out here. Later on in the show, I'm going to present my opinion and Randall's thoughts about Jon Stewart returning to The Daily Show to host weekly on Mondays through the 2024 election. He's also going to be serving as the executive producer for The Daily Show. He is back, but that means that Florida A&M alumnus Roy Wood Jr. didn't get the opportunity. I've written a lot about it. Now you get a chance to hear me speak on it. That's coming up in a second. But we got a lot to cover in the front page report.
Get up on what's trending.
Get up!
You're listening to the front page report on HBCU Pulse Radio.
All right, these are the stories that are trending now on HBCU Pulse. Following a 1-9 season under former head coach Gerard Wilcher, Morehouse is looking to make a splash hire by bringing in Hugh Jackson to lead the football program. Now, Jackson is an NFL coaching veteran that recently served as head coach of Grambling in the 2022 and 2023 seasons. He was let go by Grambling following the team's loss to Southern in the 50th annual Bayou Classic back in late November. Now, news of Hugh Jackson becoming the head football coach at Morehouse was broken by Scotty of Allscripts TV and other outlets such as Kyle T. Mosley at Sports Illustrated HBCU Legends further confirmed the reports. News of Jackson's negotiations and his potential hire sparked varied conversations in the community about if he's the best fit to lead the program. Now, Jackson, his time at Grambling was 8-14, which of course is not the best record over two seasons. When you put it in context, it tells a different story. I know the win-loss record doesn't look like it, but it seemed as if he was slowly but surely building a contender at Grambling. Because let's not forget, he brought in former Alabama State quarterback Miles Crawley, and Miles Crawley helped that Grambling offense move down the field. They had an explosive, really fun offense. And at the end of the season, Grambling ranked second in the conference in total offense with 376 yards per game. And they were third in scoring offense as they put up 28 points a game. So the offense surely was there. Hugh Jackson had something going there. But the problem, like I highlighted all season alongside Ariel here on HBCU Pulse Radio, is the defense. They were giving up 28 points to their opponents. So you can't score 28 points and then allow 28 points on average. That is not sustainable, because that tells me that eventually you're not going to score the prerequisite amount of points and you're allowing the other team to score a lot of points, and then you're ultimately going to lose. So that was the real weakness to me in the Hugh Jackson era, but the offenses were really explosive. But let's look at Morehouse, okay? So Morehouse ended the 2023 season with a 1-9 record, with their sole victory coming over in-city rival Clark Atlanta University last season. Morehouse hasn't had a winning season since 2018, but I do have to admit, though, that in 2021, Morehouse had a path to win the SIAC football championship. At least they had opportunity to be featured in the game, because they started reeling off wins in conference and they played Albany State incredibly tough. And as we know, Albany State goes on to win the SIAC championship in 2021 under coach Gabe Gardenia. So Morehouse had some competitive teams. The record isn't an indicator of how competitive those teams were. But to be fair, they have not had a winning season since 2018, and they haven't won a conference championship in the SIAC since 1991, and they shared that co-champion title with four other teams. So if hired, Hugh Jackson would be tasked with rebuilding a Morehouse College program that is one of the founding members of the SIAC. And Morehouse has also seen football success in his history. But, you know, these past few years, this past millennium, they've had a really hard time fielding competitive teams successively. They've had 11 winning seasons since 2000, including an NCAA Division II playoff berth in 2010 under head coach Rich Freeman. If Hugh Jackson can bring Morehouse back to prominence, I honestly can argue that it'll be good for HBCU football and certainly great for the SIAC. But he has to have the chance, though. He didn't really receive that chance at Grambling because they let him go quickly when he was starting to really catch his footing. And I honestly think that the third season in a Willie Simmons-led SWAC might have been a little bit better for him. And it probably would have been him jostling with Alabama State in the East, in the West. They probably could have put together a competitive team. And he might have been contending to go to the Celebration Bowl and win a SWAC championship. You got to give coaches time. But if he's hired, I'm excited to see where things will go. It'll be very exciting to cover Division II football next season if he does get hired at Morehouse. But one thing is for sure, Fort Valley State University, we're going to be all right. We stay beating Morehouse in football, and I'm not really worried in the slightest. They're going to stay at home coming up on it. But it's lit, though, so shout it out. All right, so let's talk about Lions GM Brad Holmes. So congratulations to him. He's a North Carolina A&T alumnus and the vice president of the Lions as well as their general manager. He won Executive of the Year from the Pro Football Writers Association. Now, Holmes winning this award is the first time a Lions executive has won it since it was created in 1993. And it's amazing because Brad Holmes is HBCU excellence personified. He's a 2002 graduate of North Carolina A&T and played defensive tackle for the football team, and he was like that. He was a four-year letterman, two-year starter, and he was the captain of the team in 2001. But here's something that's really important, and it really hits me in the heart. He has an amazing story of overcoming tragedy as he was involved in a life-threatening car accident that left him in a coma for a week. And we did a feature on his story on Clutch Points about how he worked his way back to the football field for the Aggies and ultimately rose to success, first becoming an NFL scout, then becoming the director of college scouting for the Rams, then getting this opportunity with the Detroit Lions, who have been really successful this season. And I'm going to let y'all in on a secret as I'm recording this, okay? We got to see what the Lions are going to do, if they're going to make it to the Super Bowl or if they're not. But we had to highlight this story because Brad Holmes is doing amazing things. And I implore you all to read our article about Brad Holmes on Clutch Points. It's called HBCU Success Stories, Brad Holmes, North Carolina A&T. It's a very compelling read, and it's very inspirational. But let's talk about this. I want to really have a conversation real quick before we move on. Did new Benedict College head coach Ron Dickerson Jr. throw shade at now South Carolina State head coach and former Benedict head coach Chinnis Berry? So Benedict College announced that Ron Dickerson Jr. will be succeeding Chinnis Berry as the head coach of the football program. Now, we talked extensively about Chinnis Berry and how he was the hottest free agent on the market since LeBron James left the Cavaliers in 2010 and signed with the Miami Heat. He was linked to Southern, to Texas Southern, to Grambling, to South Carolina State. He was linked to so many job openings in the HBCU football world because of his massive success at Benedict, but also his amazing coaching pedigree as an assistant coach. Like, he's coached in the MEAC and the SWAC and the SIAC. So he has so much experience. So really, that's a coach you want to get for your program. So he was a hot commodity. But let's talk about Ron Dickerson Jr. So Dickerson joins Benedict after two seasons with the University of West Florida, where he served as offensive coordinator. Now, in his tenure, the Argonauts won back-to-back Gulf South Conference championships and made the NCAA Division II national semifinals in 2022. His offense ranked 17th in the nation in passing offense and 20th in the nation in total offense. And then in 2022, he served as wide receivers coach, with his receiving core ranking 5th in the nation in passing yards per completion. That's really good. Now, Dickerson also has HBCU experience. He started his career working for his father, Ron Dickerson, at Alabama State, where the youngest Dickerson, that is Dickerson Jr., served as run game coordinator. He then had stops at Morgan State and Jackson State in subsequent years in the HBCU coaching ranks. So that's a very impressive resume, I must say. So I totally understand the hire. But I wasn't a big fan of some of the comments he made in his press conference where he was announced as the new leader of the program. So let's discuss it because first we're going to play comments obtained by Amanda Poole of local Columbia affiliate Fox 57, where it appeared as if in talking about his expectations for the program, he sort of threw some shots at Coach Chennis Berry's coaching success in the playoffs.
He laid a great foundation. You know, that's our plan, to continue the success here, to build a great program. The wins will come, graduations will be there, and we're chasing the NCAA national championship. That's what we're chasing. We're chasing not to be just sitting as the number one seed, but to win as the number one seed. And if we have to be the third seed, it doesn't matter. As long as we're there, we will find a way to win.
So I just want to ask y'all, like, maybe it's just me. I'm not trying to make stuff up. That's not my MO. But that didn't appear shady to you all? Maybe a little bit of shade, a little bit of directness? It seemed a little bit pointed because Coach Berry got the number one seed in Super Region 2 for Benedict in 2022 and 2023. And of course, we know that Benedict lost to Wingate in 2022, and they lost to Lenoir Ryan, who ultimately won Super Region 2 and made it to the semifinals in 2023. So it seemed like, hey, it don't matter. We're not just going to get the number one seed. We're going to win the national championship. We can get the third seed, the fourth seed. It don't matter. We're going to win the championship. And I ain't going to lie. It just sounded a little bit shady to me. But y'all know where I stand on playoff talks. I just do not think it's the ultimate success measuring stick for a coach. Like, I understand making it to the playoffs and being successful, winning a game, maybe making it to the semifinals. We saw Connor Maynard do that at Winston-Salem State. But at the same time, I just want you to win in conference, and then everything else is extra, because we know that there's a resource disadvantage when it comes to these HBCUs. We know that. And I understand people say, oh, that's not really an excuse. But it is something that we have to deal with. And also, we have a talent disparity that we can address when it comes to that offensive line and that defensive line, because it, at all levels of college football, that's what the contenders have. That's what the national powers have. They have a strong offensive line. They have a strong defensive line. We got the skilled players. We even have the quarterbacks. We have the running backs. But if we don't have a stout offensive and defensive line, which Benedict did have in the Berry years, we ain't really going to do what we need to do. But I got to say this, though. I can't knock Coach Dickerson's ambitions, because I think that that is a good ambition to win the national title and bring that level of prominence and that expectation to Benedict, especially after what Coach Berry did these past three seasons. But he should know that it isn't easy to win in the NCAA Division II playoffs, because University of West Florida, they did make a run. They did go to the semifinals in 2022, but they got blown out 38-17 by eventual champion that year, Ferris State. Then West Florida made it back to the playoffs. Mind you, West Florida is in Super Region 2, and then they got beaten in the opening round by Delta State 49-14, that then went on to lose to Valdosta State. All right, so like, we know that the playoffs can be challenging, and there's only one champion. And the time that Coach Dickerson was at West Florida as offensive coordinator, great numbers, made the playoffs, made the semifinals in 2022, but ultimately they didn't win the championship. But meanwhile, you look at Coach Chennis Berry, number one seed twice, they never got blown out. Yeah, they lost to Wingate, but that was not a blowout. Yeah, they lost to Lenoir Ryan, but they played Lenoir Ryan better than any other team that Lenoir Ryan played on their run to the semifinals. Then they got beat down by Harding. And mind you, Harding ended up winning the whole entire thing. They won the whole entire Division II national championship. So I'm just saying, Super Region 2 is competitive. Coach Berry has some great teams, but folks lose. That was the second time in the playoffs. And honestly, I would say that Benedict played better, but you got to get that defense off the field. So that story to me, honestly, is a little bit different. And it seemed a little bit shady, but if it wasn't, cool to me. That's all good. We just want to play some good football here in the SIC. We want Coach Berry to do great. We want Coach Dickerson to do great. But let's talk about also his vision for the coaching staff and also the team, because he's promising that he's going to build an all-star coaching staff and attract Power 5 talent to Benedict.
But where we are in the time right now, in 2 weeks is National Sign Day. I'm not worried about that. We're bringing a great coach. I got kids. I got coaches calling, Coach, congratulations. Coach, we want to come to Benedict. I got people that were in the NFL that want to come to Benedict. I got players that want to come from Power 5s to Benedict. So, again,
If they don't want to do right, they don't care about Benedict.
Now, that's some ambitious goals. Now, if he can do that, that's really great. I'm not knocking it. If he can do it, it's great. Those are some bold words. But if Coach Dickerson, he has that pedigree, he has that close connections, he can bring NFL caliber coaches and Power 5 transfers in, that'll be amazing. If he can bring other heavy hitter Division II players to Benedict, that'll be great. I think that'll make the conference more competitive. We'll have some really great games, and I think competitive teams in Division II that are in the conference, that are HBCUs, I think that does very well for us. But here's the thing. One thing for me, for sure, that I know is my alma mater, Fort Valley State University, is going to be all right because we're going to get our win back on Benedict. Because blew us out twice, I must admit. Ran a homecoming in 2022, then blew us out on national television on ESPN in 2023. Listen, we're going to get it back, okay? So, Coach Ron Dickerson, because Sean Gibbs is back, okay? He ain't going to FAMU. So, Coach Sean Gibbs got some coming. So, hopefully the Power 5 transfers and the NFL coaches can lock it down for Coach Dickerson, all right? But we'll see what happens there. But outside of that, that is the front page report. Coming up next, let's talk about John Stewart returning to The Daily Show and why it seems that Florida A&M alumnus Roy Wood Jr. keeps getting passed up. You listen to HBCU Pulse Radio.
Don't go anywhere.
Y'all know who I am, right?
Yeah. HBCU Pulse Radio will be right back after this commercial break.
You know, they say love is unconditional, and that's something that I know I've gotten from my family, especially my mom. My mom has always shown me what love looks like, what faith looks like, what courage looks like, and she's helped me in ways that she honestly doesn't even know. And I know sometimes they can get tricky, it can get challenging, because sometimes we do things that our families and our parents don't really expect for us to do. But one thing about love being unconditional, that the unconditional love is always there. And that's something that I always seize on. But these relationships, like I said, are not always easy. And a common misconception about relationships is that they have to be easy to be quote unquote right. But that's not true. The best relationships are the ones where everyone puts in the work to make it great. Oftentimes we have a hard time navigating tough moments. And to be honest, that's perfectly fine. The good news is that we have access to therapy and a safe space to work through the challenges we face in all of our relationships, family relationships, platonic relationships, serious relationships. We have a place and a safe space to grow and learn more about yourself. Therapy can be a great way to improve your relationships on and off campus, and even when you graduate, whether they're with your friends, your classmates, your teachers, your family, your coworkers. Therapy can help you understand who you are and identify your strengths and weaknesses, what you like, what you don't like, help you cope with stress and emotion and changes in your life. Therapy helps you communicate with others and better resolve conflict. Therapy also helps you develop skills that will benefit you in your academic, personal, and professional life. And trust me, that's something that we all need. Therapy helps you with self-esteem, motivation, goal setting, problem solving, and certainly time management. Therapy is not a sign of weakness or failure, and I'm so glad that that is not the narrative anymore. It's a sign of courage and growth, and it's important that if you love yourself, you love yourself enough to go to therapy. Now, if you're thinking about finding a good therapist, I have the solution for you. I urge you to give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, it's convenient, and it's very accessible. I use BetterHelp. So here's what I want you to do. Visit BetterHelp.com/HBCU to get 10% off your first month today. That's BetterHelp.com/HBCU to get 10% off your first month. I really urge you to tap in with BetterHelp because this year is all about self-improvement and loving ourselves. You can't love yourself if you don't take care of your mental health.
Welcome back. In four, three, two, one. Radio, the heart of HBCU culture. You're listening to Randall's Thoughts on HBCU Pulse Radio.
Yes, so on today's Randall's Thoughts, let's talk about The Daily Show. Yes, The Daily Show on Comedy Central. It was announced last Wednesday that Jon Stewart will be returning back to The Daily Show after leaving in August 2015. So Jon Stewart is returning to host the Monday edition of the show and also serve as the executive producer for the program as we move into the 2024 election season. The story was published by Variety and other entertainment publications on Wednesday afternoon. Stewart is slated to begin his once per week hosting gig on February the 12th, and his stay on the program could extend well into 2025. When the news dropped that Jon Stewart returning to The Daily Show, a lot of folks were excited, and I understand. Jon Stewart turned The Daily Show into one of the most important media vehicles in the political landscape, and he found his voice during the George W. Bush administration and the Iraq War. With a lot of his stances, his comedic bits, and a lot of the things he talked about, Jon Stewart connected with younger viewers at that time who, like he did, disagreed with the policies and moves that elected officials were making at the time. And that's when he became a legend. He emerged as the de facto political voice of his generation. Like, you would stay up until 11 p.m. to hear his take on the world, on the news, and also some typically pretty tough interviews with politicians and pretty fun interviews with actors, actresses, rappers, athletes. Like, Jon Stewart really had that impact. And personally, one of my favorite interviews from him was towards the end of his original run back in 2015 when he interviewed Barack Obama. And it was honestly like watching two elite boxers go at it for 12 rounds and it comes to a decision. Or seeing two NBA legends like LeBron and Steph Curry or LeBron and Kevin Durant go at it on the hardwood. It was an intellectual but respectful dialogue, and it was just so interesting to see them dialogue so intelligently about what was going on politically in the world at that time. The moments like that are why so many people were disappointed when he retired before the 2016 election really got good. However, Jon Stewart didn't stay away from the media industry too long. He popped out with his own Apple TV Plus show called The Problem with Jon Stewart in 2021. The show, if you never viewed it, I did, was like The Daily Show, but all grown up. Jon Stewart's tone on that show changed from being super jokey on The Daily Show to his commentary being more pointed. The episodes of the series are more topical when not as driven by current events. Stewart was more serious and measured in his commentary on the program and was prone to have very long monologues that deconstructed issues more succinctly than what he was able to do in the 30 minutes of time allotted on The Daily Show. Really less than that, because you got to add in commercials plus the interview. He would also speak with panels of people directly involved or affected by the issue that he discussed on the show. And of course, it would not be a Jon Stewart-led program in this day and age if he didn't do interviews where he held powerful people such as politicians to account. Jon Stewart's show was canceled back in October due to creative differences with Apple TV Plus, but months later, he's back in the house that he built, The Daily Show. So Jon Stewart's voice is certainly still needed in the political world, and I think his wisdom and his wit could really help folks make sense of what's going on in this election landscape. But I think what's lost in Jon Stewart returning to The Daily Show is Florida A&M alumnus Roy Wood Jr., who is brilliant in his own right. So I want to just say this, right? This is the third time, 1, 2, 3, that Roy Wood Jr. has been passed over for the position as the host of The Daily Show. Let's talk about it. First, Hasan Minhaj was favored to lead the program over Roy before his bid was ended due to controversy over jokes he told in his stand-up. Then the program continued after that to continue its guest host format after the Writers Guild of America strike, which lasted for months. Then around that time, when they were like, you know what? If we're not going to do Hasan Minhaj, we're going to go back to the guest host format. Roy Wood Jr. was like, yeah, nah, I'm leaving. I'm good. He didn't beat around the bush about why he was leaving. He said to NPR in a feature where he talked about his exit, he said, quote, "I can't come up with plan B while still working with plan A. The job of a correspondent is not really one where you can juggle multiple things. And I think 8 years is a good run." Now we're here, a couple of weeks after Roy made headlines at the Emmys for mouthing that Comedy Central needs to find a host for The Daily Show. He was passed over again, a third time, to bring back Jon Stewart, who left The Daily Show in 2015. Do y'all realize that's almost been a decade ago? That's almost been a decade ago. We've had three presidents since then at this point, and they brought Jon Stewart back when it seemed pretty clear that he wasn't really trying to be on The Daily Show. Instead of trying to get Roy a shot, they brought Jon back. And like I said, I have no problem with Jon being back, but Roy Wood Jr.'s exclusion from the opportunity to even be truly considered to serve as a host is puzzling to me. I'll even go as far as to say this, right? It's maddening. And I have stats to back it up. Before his departure, Wood was the most tenured correspondent on the program because he joined Trevor Noah in 2015. He proved his ability to craft timely jokes while also having a defined point of view in his monologue at the 2023 White House Correspondents' Dinner in April.
If your election needs the truth, put Dominion in your booth. I ain't gonna get sued. It's three people you don't want to see in the courtroom. That's Dominion, Cardi B, or Gwyneth Paltrow. You gonna lose. My mother is here tonight. And I know she's furious right now because I'm trying to put on camera, but my mother was amongst a group of black student protesters fighting for equality in the 60s at Delta State University. And that was a dangerous time. But those types of incidents were covered by local reporters, and some of the shame that came from the national embarrassment of treating people inhumanely is part of the pressure that helped to create that type of change. What would have become of my mother and those other protesters if a local journalist wasn't there telling the story? And now it's no different. But thankfully, my mother's story was told. She got to complete her degree at Delta State and continued on to Florida A&M and got another degree. And then, for the last 45 years, has worked at a historically black college as an educator and an administrator. And one of those many black colleges that need a little bit more funding. You got a 20 on your joke. Send that down to one of the black colleges.
His appearance drew a combined audience of 2,198,000 viewers on CNN and MSNBC. And also, his monologue got rave reviews, which, if you know like how I know, every White House Correspondents' Dinner performance does not elicit that. Even before that performance, he served as the guest host of The Daily Show in April and averaged 424,500 viewers in his week at the helm of the program. Like, I'm not just saying that Roy should get it because he is an HBCU alum from FAMU, or I like him, he's one of my favorite comedians. That's not why I'm saying this. We actually have real numbers to back up that he would be a good fit. Now, listen, I'm not saying that Comedy Central is at fault for not picking Roy or bringing back Jon Stewart. That is not what I'm saying. They have the right to do whatever they believe is in the best interest of their media property, and I respect that. You can't do nothing but respect it. But you really can't help but wonder, why has Roy Wood Jr. not gotten the opportunity to lead a show like The Daily Show or a subsequent show? Like John Oliver was given an opportunity. He hosted The Daily Show for a whole entire summer while Jon Stewart was out filming a movie. And then what happened? He got Last Week Tonight. So why hasn't Roy, who's one of the more popular correspondents on The Daily Show, also gotten an opportunity? Now, I believe that Comedy Central has to afford a younger voice the opportunity to lead The Daily Show. Because it's not like they haven't done it before. They gave a young comedian in his late 30s named Jon Stewart the opportunity to lead the program in 1999. Jon Stewart was in his late 30s. You have Roy at 45 that could lead the program for years as he helps the program adjust to a late night television industry that is increasingly, and we see it, losing market share to video sharing platforms like TikTok and YouTube. You have the different streaming services that are trying to jostle for a position in the market. The late night TV shows aren't hitting like that anymore. They don't have the influence that they once had. There is no more perfect time to bring in someone like Roy to lead the program into this new era of media and politics. But they gotta give Roy the opportunity to cook. I mean, they gave it to him back last April, but they have to give Roy Wood Jr. the opportunity to really prove that he can do it. But it seems like the call of a lot of fans like me have fallen on deaf ears, and that chance will not happen for Roy in 2024, unfortunately. But whether it's Comedy Central or another platform, HBO, I don't know. They have to give Roy the opportunity to get his own platform to shine. And if he doesn't, I believe it is the biggest bag fumble that the TV industry has had in a long time. And it will be on the fault of the producers, the showrunners, the TV execs, that y'all didn't give Roy Wood Jr. an opportunity to shine when he's funny, he's timely, he's insightful, he's young, and he can build a sustainable program. He already has a fan base, he has media experiences, he has connections, he can interview. why not give this FAMU alumni the opportunity to build a program and build his impact? But I digress. Those are my thoughts on today.
HBCU.
They know just who we are.
Post Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for the show on today. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I want to say, if you all want to read my written commentary about Roy Wood Jr. not getting the opportunity to host the Daily Show, make sure to head over to clutchpoints.com and type in John Stewart returns to the Daily Show. What about Roy Wood Jr.? I give a deeper breakdown into his ratings numbers when he hosted the Daily Show last April. But outside of that, thanks for tuning in. Make sure to follow HBCU Pulse on Instagram at HBCU Pulse, YouTube at HBCU Pulse, Twitter and TikTok at the HBCU Pulse, and head over to clutchpoints.com/HBCU to stay informed on what's going on in HBCU life. But outside of that, thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, we'll see you on the other side, and I'll catch you next week.
Like what you hear?
Yeah.
Subscribe to HBCU Pulse Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, head to HBCUPulse.com to stay up to date on what's going on in the HBCU community. Thank you for listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.